The LAR Files, the ultimate Rams podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The big interview.
Let's get to the bottom of what's going on with the Los Angeles Rams. I'm still getting used to that. I'm sure he is too. You find him on Twitter at @NickFerguson_25, a 10-year NFL vet, and of course, one of the hosts of NFL on TuneIn. Nick Ferguson joins me. Nick, there's a whole lot of things that we could talk about out of that Monday night game, but I guess I want to start with the obvious one, and that is, if your offense is going to look like that, how is it that the Rams don't have Jared Goff on the field?
I know Coach Fisher and Les Snead and the Rams organization has taken a lot of heat over the past couple of days by not putting their prize possession on display, and that's Jared Goff. And the reason you can't do that, if you take a look at that Monday Night Football game, if you know that you have the inability to protect your quarterback, you don't have adequate weapons on the outside that can stretch the field vertically, and I'm not talking about a dumb pass and a flat to Tavon Austin and watch him try to weave through defenders. If you know you can't do any of those things, why put Jared Goff in that tough situation? It's not a thing of him not being well-equipped to take over the number one spot, but you want to bring him along slowly. This is a different situation from what the Philadelphia Eagles found themselves facing with the number two pick, Carson Wentz. They traded off Sam Bradford, so they had to go with the number one quarterback. With the Rams, they don't want to do that, and we know the history of teams that have been led by Jeff Fisher. You know, they haven't really made it to the postseason, so you don't want to compound things by throwing your young quarterback to the wolves and having his ego to be so fragile that he can't overcome that. So I know this is only the first game of the season, and everyone is saying, hey, put Jared Goff in. I'm saying don't do that. He's not one of those individuals that you want to put in this type of situation. You need to first fix that offensive line, and then you can put your franchise quarterback behind that offensive line.
So you've got a kind of an interesting perspective on it, Nick, because I've heard a lot of folks that have said that the reason he's not out there is because of him, to sort of imply that Jared just isn't ready, he hasn't picked up the playbook, fill in the blank with whatever the reasons are. Your point is that Jeff Fisher may actually be, to a certain extent, protecting him from being eaten alive by the Wolves.
Well, that's essentially it. Now, being as though he is a rookie, he's coming out of Cal system, he has to learn new terminology. There's always kind of a learning curve for a young quarterback. So he doesn't have a full command of the playbook. That is another reason you don't want to put him out there. You have a guy who is the face of your franchise once again. He doesn't have a full command of the playbook, and then you have deficiencies on that front line. That's a recipe for a disaster. We saw Case Keenum, who's more familiar with the offense than Jared Goff is, and he struggled. So you don't put a rookie in that type of situation. You just don't do it. It's not one of those times where, you know, desperation. And when individuals get desperate, I always say they do dumb things, right? Everyone's looking at the 28-0 loss against the 49ers on the road, and it's like, well, change has to come. And the first thing is fire the coach. Put in a young rookie quarterback. No. I say pump your brakes. It's only week one. You lick your wounds. You learn from this as a team. You leave Case Keenum as your quarterback. You go every day to practice, extra study time. You get the rookie in early in the morning. You stay late at night. And you bring him along. And then maybe by week five, if things have not turned around, now you insert the rookie, but not in game two against the Seattle Seahawks defense that is still hungry. You don't do that.
when folks are watching the game, you talk, Nick, about needing to see the offensive line do more, needing them to see better. For the layman fan, what are you seeing that they're doing wrong? Because obviously Todd Gurley, there's a lot of expectations on him to try to help take the pressure off of whoever the quarterback is, whether that's Keenum or Goff or whoever it is to take some pressure off of that person by being able to be effective running the ball. But if the offensive line has problems, that's not going to matter. Talk to me about that line and about what's wrong right now with the ability for Todd Gurley to get going.
When you look at the San Francisco Monday night game, what I saw was five offensive linemen facing four pass rushers from the San Francisco 49ers. When you're able to get to the throat of the quarterback with just four guys, you're not adding on linebackers, you're not adding on safeties, that's a bad look. What I saw was guys not communicating. The center is considered to be the quarterback of the offensive line. He needs to talk and communicate. Well, listen, I have the double team. If I see that you have full command of the guy rushing over you, I'm going to slide off and help. You saw a lot of guys just kind of lock on guys, and they didn't really kind of scan their head from side, from right to left to see if anyone needs help. So if this team can't do a great job passing, and they're doing a very horrendous job run blocking, and like you said, Todd Gurley is brought in to take the pressure off of whomever's at the quarterback position. But if you can't pass block and you can't run block, that's very difficult. What I'm saying is, one, hand placement. As an offensive line, the coach is always telling you, be able to put your hands in a proper place that's inside the breastplate of those defensive linemen, so that way you can control them and move them when you want to. And also, moving your feet. Any offensive line coach would tell you that's the key part of playing the position, the ability to move your feet. I saw a lot of guys, once they put their hands on defenders, they stop moving their feet. So when that defender went to that second or third move, they just kind of slipped and went straight to the quarterback. So you have to be able to work on your feet, and that goes back to understanding the fundamentals and working on the fundamentals. So this is a case, looking at the game Monday night, on both sides of the ball, they need to go back to working on fundamentals. Just don't worry about, you know, the film. Just burn this game film. Go back and work on the same fundamentals that you did not work on and you should have worked on in training camp.
Nick, there were some expectations on this defense to be, you know, above average. I don't want to say elite. I don't want to put them in there with Denver or Minnesota or Seattle or even Arizona. But there was expectations for them to be pretty good. How much of a kick in the teeth is it for them to give up 28 points to Blaine Gabbert and the Niners in the first game?
Well, you got to tip your cap to Chip Kelly in the first game. We know that he runs that NASCAR up-tempo, how many plays can we get in a certain amount of time to wear down the defense. So they did their part. The offensive line actually controlled what I thought was one of the better front sevens in the league as far as getting after the quarterback. The 49ers dominated that. They controlled the line of scrimmage. And, you know, the Rams have some great guys, Aaron Donald, Michael Brockers, and Robert Quinn. These guys can actually get at the quarterback, but these horses need rest. And when your offense can't really sustain drives and they go 3 for 15 on third down, that means you're out there as a defense even more. So you're worn down in the first game. You play more snaps in the first game than your offense has had offensively. So that what makes it tough for any team. You know, you mentioned the Denver Broncos. If the Denver Broncos offense cannot move the ball, that would put pressure on Von Miller and the ability to get to the quarterback. So it's the same thing that's happened. This is a very talented defensive unit. And I know we talk about NFL being a passing league, but defense still wins championship. And the identity of this Rams team is not Todd Gurley and how well we can run the ball. It's defense. So the defense needs some help. And that starts with the offense having ability to move the ball.
Getting ready for a home game in Los Angeles, the first time we've used those words in a long time in the league against the Seahawks. Maybe a step back, Nick, as you look at this Rams team, Do you feel like, to a certain extent, this season, given that they just moved, given the trade for the number one overall pick, all those kinds of things, is there an automatic pass, if you will, that's going to be given to whatever happens with this team this year, or do you believe that Jeff Fisher is on a hot seat already?
Jeff Fisher is on a hot seat. If you looked at the tweets in the last 24 hours, I mean, if it were up to the fans of Los Angeles, he would already be fired. But a good thing it's not up to the fans of Los Angeles. It is a very tough place to play. I mean, you talk about the Dodgers. I mean, they're constantly in the playoffs. Look at the legacy and the tradition of the Los Angeles Lakers, and then the Clippers are now making a name for themselves. This is not one of those markets where, you know, 8-8 would just kind of get you by and the fans would just be happy with that. It's not one of those type of places. They expect to win, and they don't want to hear, hey, listen, the team just moved from St. Louis, or, hey, you gave up a plethora of picks to pick up Jared Goff, and he's having whatever issue that fans feel as though he's having. They don't have time for that. It's kind of a win-now type of mentality. I just hope that Jeff Fisher and his staff can survive this. And once again, he's at their practice facility telling them, listen, we didn't go out and play a great game. Now, on either side of the ball. And this is the first game of the season. So we will play San Francisco again. We will see them at the end of the season. But right now, we need to get ready for the next game. And the next game is the Seattle Seahawks. If they can do that, if the Rams can actually make it a game, and we saw what the Miami Dolphins were able to do in week one against Seattle. You know, Russell Wilson is going to limp. He's limping in with that sore ankle. If they can make it a game, now they change some of the narratives and the storylines about the Rams, and only winning can cure all of that. So they need to start piling up some W's and do it real soon.
All right, last one for you. I said that was the last one. I got one more for you, Nick, just for fun. So if you're still playing and you're in that game on Monday night and that idiot comes out of the stands, are you taking him down?
You know, you think about doing it, but you know that in the world we live in now, even if that person is wrong, someone has the ability to sue you. And knowing that, I will leave it up to the authorities. That's what they get paid to do. I get paid to tackle people in other uniforms, not idiots who decide to run on the field.
All right. I'll give you a pass on that one because I know you'd be tempted, man. I know you'd be tempted. It's okay.
I'm not saying that I wouldn't be tempted. I would be really antsy, right? But also, but the logical side will take over from the physical side. I say, well, how much is this potentially going to cost me? And I would stop.
Makes sense.
That's my honest to truth answer.
Makes sense to me. Nick Ferguson, 10-year NFL vet. You can hear him on NFL on TuneIn, and of course follow him on Twitter. Get some great insight. We're talking Rams. Nick Ferguson, he's on Twitter at @NickFerguson_25. Nick, really appreciate the time this week. Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
All right, thank you. Anytime.
There goes Nick. Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. Yeah, when they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, you know, maybe you can play that formula Well, he was only 17-35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. And so, yeah, we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks, notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams. Let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They, too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good, and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First, for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. For them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slog. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, you know, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did, or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. So you had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City, if nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamaal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points, a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, or resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. And his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints' defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know, once again, they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing, talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at, what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd, and, oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hand.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure, if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert, that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy. And you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that, you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake, Jimmy.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. This is going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD, just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.